Just so you know, last night we did confirm that we do have insurance. So if there's any claims, see Charles and David afterwards, and they'll get the paper work sorted out for you. Mike, are those a standard issue with the Canadian Navy, or because if they are, I'm glad you partnered with the American Navy. I think it's a it's good. Thank you, Mike, for sharing that story. And I don't think we could have picked a better week to have children's story with geography and pyramid lesson included. But what a gift it is to be here and to be able to share these moments together. Let's start by doing something that I think we should do. Turn to the person next to you and tell them today, with no guilt of saying something that is untruthful, tell them today, your smile shines brighter than the sun. The sun is not shining today, so you can be confident that it's true today. All right. And just tell them they look beautiful this morning and that you're grateful that they're here. Bruce, you look kind of lonely. Your smile shines brighter than the sun? Yeah, good. And you look beautiful today. And I'm not going to think of that for more than 5 minutes. I paid attention to your Sabbath school. For those who were in Sabbath school, you get that. All right. It is so good to be here. Speaking of things we're grateful for, I am so happy that Robin today was welcomed into official membership, even though she's been part of the family since like forever. But I think it took her that long to realize that we're not that crazy. And she says, fine, I can take the name on this time around. So Robin, welcome. And I also saw some happy grandparents here today. A couple, it was Wednesday this week, baby Mason was born, 6 pounds, 12 ounces. Ashley and Dan Fuller just had their baby, and grandparents are here doing grandpa duty, which is what they're supposed to do. So, again, so many things to be grateful for. Some of you have been traveling, and it's good to see you back. Some kids that have been studying hard, and we haven't gotten that chance to see them in a while, just want you to let you know that we're glad that you're here. If you're visiting here for the first time, we have some gifts for you that we'd also love to give you. And, again, we just want you to know that we are happy that you're here and that you look absolutely beautiful. And my daughter is going to, I guess, hang out with us as we do this thing. You want to sit here, baby? All right, good. So today I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about something that gets picked on quite a bit. It seems like it's already Christmas time. I went to Walmart a few days ago, and they already got all the Christmas decorations. In my neighborhood, a bunch of houses already got their Christmas lights up, and it's like we took down the Halloween stuff, and we brought the Christmas things up, and I am actually a little bit offended, because just like a redheaded stepchild of a holiday called Thanksgiving, that always gets pushed to the side, and I think it's one of the most beautiful holidays that we can celebrate, and one that can bring deep joy to our lives. So today I want us to spend a little bit of time talking about gratefulness and why it's such a good idea to celebrate Thanksgiving. And I don't know if we're going to be able to make Thanksgiving great again, but we can at least spend a little bit of time talking about why it is so important to be thankful. So I want to ask you a question, and I want you to be able to share, somebody to be bold enough to share, but I want you to think of a moment in your life, the earliest moment in your life where you can remember feeling grateful. What's the earliest memory that you have of a time in your life where you were really grateful? Grateful for something, for someone, for being alive. Think of a moment, and then whoever is bold enough, raise your hand to share what that moment was. And if it's not, I'm going to pick on somebody. So let's hope somebody raises their hand. So somebody who wants to share of a moment in their life where they felt deeply grateful. The earliest memory you can have. Jonathan. A bunch of stinging things. She was mom for you. Okay. It's good when moms are moms for us. Very good. Very good. Somebody else. Thank you, Jonathan. Saving mom from stingy things. Somebody else that can think of a moment in their lives where you were deeply grateful. One of you guys? You're a Vikings fan, so I don't know if we're going to go your way, but you have something? Okay. He pushed you out. So you were helpful for a friend that pushed you out. Nice. So thankful for a friend that was able to push you out. And I'm sure you were also thankful for air, right? Fresh air that we could breathe. That's a really good one. Yes. You got a cat for your birthday. Don't say that too much because our kids are asking us for pet for the longest time. And I am so happy for you. And maybe my kids will be grateful one day, but not anytime soon. No chance. Let me see somebody who has been in this world for a while. Let's see somebody who's, can we put a qualifying criteria? A grandparent that can remember a moment early on in their lives when they were really grateful. Are you calling her a grandma in public? That's not kosher. So what's a moment when that you can remember early on that you were thankful? Your grandmother. Okay, thankful for grandma. Very, very good. So there's this thing about gratefulness. And when we experience all these stories, being stung, catching a breath of air, having a cat, grandma, in that moment of gratefulness, how did we feel? Did we feel angry? Did we feel sad? Did we feel irritated? What did we feel in that moment of gratefulness? Happy. So did we feel happy because we were grateful, or did we feel grateful because we were happy? What do you think? And the answer is yes, just in case, because oftentimes the answer is yes. When Cindy and I were about to get married, I had just finished my undergrad studies, and I had moved back to the States. I got my first job. I was working part-time managing communications for the Potomac Conference and also pastoring a very small church of a total of 8 whole people that attended there. And it was amazing because we doubled attendance and membership in just about a month just by my family being there, which is double membership. And it was a really good experience. For about 6 months, I stayed in a little studio would be a very fancy way of calling it, but it was more like a shed on top of a garage, and I was staying there for very low rent to save money for the wedding, because 6 months after that, I was to get married, and I wanted to make sure that we had at least some funds to have a good way to start our life together. So I was scouting out apartments, and then I found this really, really nice townhouse and unit, really tiny two-level townhouse in Fishersville, Virginia. And if you never heard of it, that's because you should have never heard of it, because it was just this tiny, I think, 4,000 people in population, 4,000 little town in central Virginia. But it was the first place that we would call home. And I did the deposit. It was like $550. So, yeah, it was very small. And we did the first month rent, last month rent. And we were ready to move in. And I moved in. And I had a mattress to sleep on. And I went from living in a fully furnished one-bedroom studio to now a little two-bedroom townhouse. And I learned very quickly that I didn't have any furniture. And furniture costs money. And money, I didn't have much of at that time. And I was thinking, man, Cindy's going to be coming in 2 weeks, and she's going to walk into this townhouse that's going to be our home, and I'm sure she's going to be very proud of me, and she's going to be so excited that we're getting married, but I have no furniture, so it's going to be a little depressing. And it's not like I can buy any furniture, so I was very worried about this and quite stressed and thinking, man, I wish I could just have some furniture, at least for the living room. And as I'm thinking about that, one day after work, I'm coming home, and right in the curb, there was this, and I think I shared part of the story, at least in the past part of it, this monster of a sectional brown couch laying on the curb with a little piece of paper that said, free. I went and I walked a quarter of a mile with each section of that sectional and brought it home. And I had to break the sectional into like three sections to make it fit within our tiny little living room, because it was from like a 5,000 square foot home fitting in like a 700 square foot apartment. But I made it fit. And I was so, so grateful that I had a couch. I washed it, and it turns out that the brown couch was actually yellow. What a surprise. And Cindy came and visited me the following week, and I was so looking forward to her coming in, and I was so proud that I was going to share the good news that we actually had a couch. And she came in, and I opened the door, and she saw this yellow monster laying there, taking up the whole living room. And deep inside, I know she had some nausea going on, but she tried to hide it as much as she can and say, oh, that's really nice. When do you plan to take it out? Was that included with the apartment? I said, no, that's our couch. And I tried to share with her how grateful I was that we had a couch. And it turned out that that was our couch for our first year in marriage. We decided from the day we got married that we would save money, and every year or so we would try to at least furnish one room in the house at a time. And we've done pretty good actually over the years. A year later, we had saved enough money that we went and we purchased our own couches. When we brought them in, and I was going to put the yellow couch on sale on Craigslist, and Cindy made me feel really guilty about it. She said, don't sell it. Don't be that cheap. Give it away. And we gave it away to this beautiful couple that was just about to get married, and they needed a huge sectional, and they came and picked it up. So we had this brand new couch. They were leather or fox leather. I'm not entirely sure. I wasn't being too picky at the time. I know they were at a very discounted price. That's what I liked. And we had new couches, and we covered them, and we looked at our couches, and they were so pretty that we didn't want to sit in them. So we left our covers in them, and then we used to just go and hang out in the dining room or in our bedroom because we had really nice couches. Because the interesting thing is that sometimes when we gain something, we also lose something. And sometimes the more we gain, there is something deep inside that is lost. Have you ever experienced that? And sometimes the more we have, the more we realize that that little thing has been lost. Earlier this week, I was having lunch with one of my colleagues, and he had just been in Africa, in Malawi to be precise, doing mission work. And he was having a hard time. I think he was jet lagged because he had his flight a few days before, and it was like a 10-hour difference. So he was having a hard time articulating what he was feeling. But we were asking him how things were over there, and he was having a hard time putting it into words, but he said something along, they're very poor, but they're not poor like us. And I was having a really hard time trying to understand what he was trying to say. But I think the realization that he came, because I've seen that before, is that sometimes you find people that perhaps have very little, a lot less than you do, but they have something. Something that makes their eyes sparkle. Something that makes their teeth shine brighter when they smile. There's something. And I think this pastor, this friend of mine, was trying to tell him, you know what? They don't have half of the things that we have, but they had a deep sense of joy. So how can we gain more things without losing that? So I want to go to just two passages in the Bible, one from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament. And these are actually set of rules. But I think these rules actually speak to how we can not lose that something. Are you with me? Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 19 is where we're going to pick up our first passage. And I will put it on the screen. But who wrote the book of Deuteronomy? Somebody would like to... I know we learned about pyramids today, so let's do also a little bit of history about the books of the Bible. Moses is writing the first five books in the Bible. He's getting the people of Israel ready to live life and live it fully. And then he writes them this set of rules. And he says, and we're going to look into the screens because they're getting like kind of cropped. So, okay, I'll try to read the best that I can. When you are harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back and get it. Leave it for the foreigner, for the fatherless, and for the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. So in essence, Moses is saying, when you go and you crop the field, when you go and you harvest the fruit of your labor, when you go and you collect from your field what is perhaps you could say rightfully yours, when you go and you collect the paycheck of all your hard labor, if you miss something, don't go twice and pick it up. Leave it. And actually, if you look in the Bible later on, what they did back then, and there's this beautiful story of this Moabite woman named Ruth and this landowner called Boaz, where you see that story, where they would actually sometimes even purposefully, they would go and harvest their field, and they would go really fast, and sometimes on purpose, they would leave the corners of the fields unharvested so people could come and they could collect what is left in the edge of the fields, and they could have something when they didn't have anything. When you are leaning your fields, if you look overlook something, if there is something that is left behind, just leave it alone and give it so the foreigner, so the fatherless, so the widow, the orphans, they will have something. And it says, and then the Lord your God will bless you in all the work of your hands. And then it goes on to say, when you beat your olives from your tree, do not go over the branches a second time. Leave it what remains for the foreigner, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And when you harvest the grapes in your vineyard, do not go over the vines again. Leave what remains for the foreigner, for the fatherless, and from the widow. Again, once again, when you go and you beat your olive tree, whatever doesn't fall, don't go a second time and get it. Leave it there, again, for those who don't have. And when you're going to your vine, and you go once by the vine, don't go a second time to pick the grapes that you missed. Now, how many people harvest wheat here? You don't seem like you harvested wheat in a while, right? No, I don't think so. And have you been an olive tree? My son loves to beat trees, but never an olive tree. There's like oak trees or maple trees or whatever. He just likes getting a stick and beating the tree. How many of you went picking grapes? I actually have gone picking grapes. When we were living in Michigan, there were a lot of vineyards there, and we used to love going and picking grapes. And they have Concord grapes, and they have, where is our young encyclopedia? How many types of grapes exist? Oh, so pyramids are your expertise, not grapes. Okay. There's all sorts of kind of grapes. And grapes have something unique, because while the fields were harvested all at once when the harvest was ready, grapes have a really slow maturing time. And when you go to your vine, when you go to collect grapes, their chances are that some grapes will be ready, but many of them will need more time to mature. And now what this commandment is saying is that when you go to your grape, collect the ones that are good, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that you won't be able to collect. Leave it for someone else. Now let me ask you something. Is that fair? What do you think? You think that's fair, Jonathan? How so? You got a good portion? Okay. Now, this farmer went, and these were not just wild vineyards. These were vineyards he cultivated. He went and he dug the land. He went and he took every rock. He went and he fertilized the land. And then he built an hedge around. And then he kept all the pests and the bugs out of his harvest. And he brought the full responsibility that if the harvest wasn't good, the losses would come from his pocket. And now when it was time to collect his food, his portion, his earnings, this is saying, pick what you can get once and leave the rest. And if you think about it, this just isn't fair. He put all the work. He put all the fertilizer. He put all the care. He took all the risk. And it would just seem that this isn't fair. Go, work all month, and there's overtime to be earned, but leave it for someone else. Go and collect your paycheck, but yeah, just that fourth week, just leave that for someone else. If you ask me, this seems absolutely unfair. This isn't fair. And then the passage ends with this. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. And that is why I commend you to do this. I commend you to do this because you were once slaves, but now you are free. Now, as I look around across this room, I am fairly certain that not many of us have ever been slaves. Have you ever been a slave? I think we always worked and earned what we deserve, or people passed down things to us. And yet I'm also absolutely sure, that we've all been freed from something at some point in our lives or another. I'm also absolutely sure that as hard it would be for us to admit, we all received some advantage that we didn't deserve. Just the fact that we're alive. Somebody did all that pushing on our behalf so that we could be here. Or somebody paid the bill at the OR so they could make a big cut and bring us to this world. And somebody put in a good word for us so we could get that job. Or somebody gave us the education that we needed to one day in our lives be successful. And somebody believed in us. And somebody trusted us. And somebody gave us an opportunity when nobody else gave us an opportunity. And when God is asking the people of Israel to leave these corners, to leave these grapes, to leave these olives, these grapes, he's telling them, remember that once you didn't have, but now you have. Remember that once you were somewhere else, but now you are here. And remember that one day you will also be somewhere else. Remember, never forget how you got to this place. Remember, because we've all been freed from something, but gratitude also keeps us free. Free. It gives us freedom from the scarcity of abundance. It gives us freedom from the indifference of affluence. It gives us freedom from the ingratitude of entitlement. It gives us freedom from the inertia of inaction. Do this, remember this, because it gives us freedom from the injustice of just what is fair. Because love isn't fair. Grace isn't fair. Salvation isn't fair. Liberation isn't fair. Because gratitude leads us to a happening, to happiness. Because gratitude makes us aware of the gift that it is to be here. And when we receive the very good things in life, the only response is to have gratitude. And it was that gratitude, that act of remembering that once you were slaves, and that's why I'm telling you to do this, so you can remember where you were and where you're going. When you remember that, you can enjoy the gift that you have today. But also, when you remember, you are able to enjoy the gift that is coming tomorrow. So at the very beginning, we said that Moses wrote these words, right? Now, when did Moses die? Will our pyramid expert help us with this one? No? Then what about some of our elder, senior citizens among us? Bible tells us that Moses died right before going into the promised land. When Moses is writing these words, his people, the people who he's writing these words, are actually living in the middle of the desert. Did they have fields in the middle of the desert? Did they have olive trees in the middle of the desert? Did they have vineyards in the middle of the desert? Moses is telling them, one day you will have something. One day you will have plenty. One day you're going to have a whole lot more than what you have now. One day you will have everything that you want. But unless you remember to be grateful, you're going to lose something when you get that. But if you can remember how you got here, you will be happy and the Lord will bless the work of your hands. Because gratitude allows us to enjoy the gift of today, but also prepares us for the gift of tomorrow. And when we receive even more gift, we will be able to keep our happiness. So let's go to a second set of rules, and then we will be starting the conclusion. Are you with me? So now we're going to a letter. So this is Moses writing, and he's preparing the people of Israel for life in freedom. Now, thousands of years passed, and now there is another man who deeply loves the people that he's writing this letter to. They were some of his best friends, and it's written by a man named Paul, and he's reading to one of the first churches he started in the church in the city of Thessalonica, and things were not going too well for these Christians. They were being persecuted, and they were being accused for things that they didn't do. And some of them were being put in jail. Some of them, their belongings were being confiscated. But as he sent his friend Timothy to speak to them, the report got back that they were actually doing great. They were actually living with joy. And then he writes at the end of this first letter, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, he writes this letter to his friends. Friends, I know you're going through difficult things. I know that you don't have everything you need just now. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to be full of joy all the time. What does it say? I want you to be joyful all the time. Never stop praying, and in everything, give thanks, because this is what God wants you to do because of Christ Jesus. Always be happy. Always have joy. Pray and give thanks for some things. Give thanks for the good things. Give thanks for what makes you happy. Give thanks for all things. Now, what does that mean? Can we be thankful for everything? Yes or no? Can we be thankful for violence? Can we be thankful for war? Can we be thankful for loss? I don't think Paul is asking his friends to be thankful for every single thing that happens. Sometimes there are things that happen that there is no good in them. Sometimes there is senseless violence to which there is no good. Sometimes there is senseless war to which there is no good. But I think Paul is actually trying to tell them something deeper than that, because even in those moments, even in all of those moments, you have a moment. And in that moment, there can be gratitude. We may not be thankful for every single thing that happens to us, but we do have a chance to be thankful for every moment that we get. Even in the times where it's difficult to be grateful, we can take a deep breath and say, thank you for this moment. Thank you for this moment. Because in every moment, there is an opportunity. In every moment, there is an opportunity to grow, to learn, to enjoy. And even in those times where it's very difficult, you have that moment. And in that moment, you can be thankful. Maybe in that moment, there is an invitation to learn. Maybe in that moment, when things are great, when you have everything that you could need, there is an opportunity to share, to give. Maybe in that moment when you're not working, there's an opportunity to rest, to reorient your life, to look at what really matters. Maybe in that moment of a breakdown of relationships, there's an opportunity, an invitation to look at yourself and see, how could I be stronger next time around? Maybe in each of these moments, there's an opportunity and there's an invitation, and you can be grateful for that moment, for this moment, for every moment. Because Jesus, in his darkest moment, in the night that he was going to be tried and later persecuted, it says that he gathered his disciples together and he gave thanks for that moment. And Jesus that night, he tried to do something that his disciples would remember. And the Bible tells us, the different gospel writers tell the story a little differently, but they all highlight the same things. It says that Jesus took bread, and he broke the bread, and he gave thanks. Jesus said, this moment, this is going to be a hard moment for me. This moment is going to bring me a lot of pain, but even in this moment, I give thanks because I see an opportunity. And then he took the grapefruit, he took wine, and he took the wine, and he gave thanks, and he said, this wine, this is my blood. This moment is going to be a difficult moment for me, but in this moment, I see an opportunity, because in this moment, I see you. He saw me, and he gave thanks. Even in his darkest moment, he gave thanks, because God knew that he had an opportunity. So he gave thanks, and he gave himself, so we could know the gift that we have. We could know the opportunity of this moment. And Jesus went and he died on that cross. And he rose again to give us the most precious gift. The gift that we get to be here. The gift that we get to breathe. The gift that life is worth living. The gift of forgiveness. The gift to give to others, to forgive others. He took that moment, he gave thanks, and he seized the opportunity. Because in that moment, he saw you and he saw me. So Paul says, wrapping that up, because of Jesus, you can have joy in every moment. Because of Jesus, you can give thanks at all moments. And now he said, do not quench the spirit within you. Do not let that spirit of gratitude give thirst. That spirit that is within you, transforming you and changing you. Do not quench it. Do not reduce to nothing the prophecies, the promises of God. Trust, test everything. And do not let good things get away from you. Because in that moment of gratitude, in that moment where we can actually be grateful for this moment, in that moment when we get to see the opportunities that are before us, you can have the moment to choose and to know what is good. And it says, hold on to what is good and let go of everything that is that isn't. So in that, there's an invitation. In gratitude, there is an invitation to hold on to what is good and let go of what isn't. And then we can take those opportunities and we can rise to the occasion. Because people who learn to be grateful, they're the people that are able to rise to the moment and respond to this opportunity. Opportunities to learn, to grow, to be patient. Opportunities sometimes to sacrifice, to give of ourselves, to give. Opportunities to heal, to rest, to be comforted by others. Opportunities to be open, to establish a relationship. Opportunities that we all get. And people who learn that everything is a gift, that every moment is a gift, that every moment has an opportunity, these are the people that can change the world. Because these people, they're not scared. They're not fearful. And because they're not fearful, they're not violent, and they are not angry. They're not scared of scarcity because they know that everything that we have is a gift. So these people do not hold tightly, they hold loosely because they know that there are better things that we can hold on to. And these people know that this moment is precious, that it's a gift freely giving, and these people can live with joy. Brother Dave is not our Dave, and I posted something on Facebook last night, and many may have thought that that was our Dave. But Brother Dave is a priest, an old man. He was raised in Austria during Nazi occupation. During much of his young age, he experienced need, violence. And when the war was over, for the very first time, he realized the gift that it's to be alive and to be free. And he was grateful. But then he left ministry and he started acquiring a lot of things. And he lost that sparkle of happiness in his life. Many years later, while being still in Austria, he met up with an old friend from the time of the war. They were children at that time when they were growing up. And this friend had actually become a missionary in Africa. And he invited Brother Dave to go to Africa and spend a week with him. And he said the moment that he stood in that tribe in Tanzania, he remembered that joy that came from knowing that every moment is a gift. And in that moment, he learned how good it was for him to be alive. And he became a missionary. He actually right now leads a movement on joy, on the gratefulness of giving. And if you want more information, gratefulness.org is his website. But he says sometimes the only thing you need to do to be able to refine that joy is to do three things. All you have to do is stop. Just stop. Sometimes we just move so fast and that all we have to do is just stop. Stop when things are going great. Stop when things are not going great. Stop when we're just trying to get to the next thing and buy the next thing or achieve the next goal. Or stop when you're just frantically just trying to stay afloat. Just stop and take a moment to look around. Just look. Take a moment and look. Look at how good things are. Look at everything that you have. Look at every breath that you take. Take a look. Look at every moment as if it's a precious gift from God. Take a moment to look, just like Jesus did when he stopped and he looked and he saw you and me and he said, now I have an opportunity. And as you look, as you see that opportunity, now take that opportunity and do something. Give something. Learn something. Sacrifice something. Let go of something. Hold on to something. But now go and do something. Because in that moment, in that evening, Jesus stopped. He looked at his disciples. He looked at you and me. And then he went and he did something. And people who live with joy are people who are able to stop, look at that moment, be grateful, and then do something with that opportunity. So here's a question for today. What are you grateful for? Maybe this week, take a moment to simply stop and say, what am I grateful for? What are the gifts in my life? How precious is this moment that I get to leave? Maybe it's an easy moment, maybe it's a hard moment, but take a moment to just stop and look around and figure out, what are you grateful for? Then you can think, how did you get that? Maybe it's your job. Did somebody help you get that job? Did somebody put in a good word for you? Then you're grateful for that person. Maybe you have a child. Well, you need a partner in bringing that child into the world, so aren't you grateful for that person? Maybe you have a great car. How did you get that car? Was there a job that enabled you to get what you needed to get? Just take a moment to stop and look at what you have. What are you grateful for? And that thing that you're grateful for, there was somebody that made it possible for you. So now let that person know how grateful you are for them. And then look at what you have. And then look at somebody else's need and say, how could what I have be a source of joy in their life? How could I leave a corner? How could I leave an olive? How could I leave a grape to make somebody's life a little more beautiful? And you will learn that every day is a gift, that every moment is a gift, and you will live with happiness. So I brought a short video that could help us illustrate what that might look like, that we could have joy every moment, every day. And then we'll sing our closing song.
I'm alive! I'm alive!
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Christine! You're here too! Mm. I love you!
I know.
Dad, what's happening?
Honey, the power works! It's coming, it goes on and off! Whatever we want! We've got clean water!
Oh, that's great. Look at that.
Ooh. I bet I know what this does!
Rain down the glorious water!
Shoes. Oh, what do we got here, guys? Food!
I love food. What? A briefcase? You gonna have work? This is awesome! Look, listen here.
Dee, the what?
Jack, be careful!
Oh. I have a car! This is grand. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, you have a car!
A car!
And don't forget your coffee!
You're the best.
Stand up and sing this last song with us. for the cross alone. Thank you for the price you paid, bearing all my sin and shame.
Eventually, we took off the covers of the couches, and we moved from one house to the other. And as we moved to Chesapeake, we took the couches about a year ago outside of the sanctuary of the living room into the family room. And last night, we had worship in those couches. They have a few stains. They're a little saggy now, but we have joy. See, gratitude is an invitation to enjoy this moment because you didn't earn it. It's a gift. and take every opportunity that every moment brings to do something with it, to give something. It's an invitation to leave a corner so you can hold on to what really matters and to find that in that giving, in that letting go, in that sharing, in that realization of gift, you found what you were looking for all along. So, Father, this morning we thank you for every moment, every those difficult moments, because we know that in every moment there's an opportunity, an invitation. And when we learn that every moment is a gift, all we can do is say thank you in finding you our joy. So, Father, this morning, all we want to do is say thank you and respond to that beautiful gift that you have given us with a heart of gratitude and service. Teach us what that looks like to each and every one of us, and give us that joy that only you can give. So once again, Father, thank you for this moment. In Jesus' name, amen.